Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Più? Sì, mi sentite? Ok, we can start. This is the panel translation from another world. Okay, I'm here instead of Flora Stagliano that cannot come. We have three guests. Luca Ciovicova, who is a writer and a translator. And a writer who writes in a tongue that is not her own mother tongue, English too. We have Silvia Castoldi, who is a translator from English to Italian. And we have Robert Corvus, who is a writer, who recently translated a role-playing game. So we have three different examples of science fiction translation. I think science fiction translation is probably one of the most difficult kind of translation. I did some too, along with Silvia, who is my wife. And it's very difficult because it often needs to decide to a literary knowledge. It needs a scientific knowledge that many translators don't have. And it often requires to invent a completely new language, because often science fiction writers invent words and things that have a name that cannot easily be translated in another language and don't have a ready-made translation. You have to invent it. So I think translation is a very difficult, science fiction translation is a very difficult operation. So I think we could start with Lucie, and ask her first to tell us what did you translate in about science fiction, what is your experience, the difficulties you met, and so on.
So. I did some translations of science fiction short stories, one of them, for example, by Nnedi Okorafor. But my bigger work was translation of urban fantasy. It was Anita Blake, The Vampire Hunter series. And it would seem, you know, like this light reading, some light erotica with vampires. Difficult thing was that some parts of the text were sounding well in English, but the moment I translate simply the translation. I thought, oh my God, this won't work in Czech. It will be so funny that the reader will start laughing. It would be pathetic. So I simply had to do subtle changes to get the atmosphere into the Czech context. And of course, in English context, you have all these names of the different creatures. You have these werewolves and the vampires and other magical beings. And to get it translated into Czech, to have the right species and the right name in Czech, that was not easy either. And the third part was that in the first books, there is a strong murder mystery element to the stories, and the main character cooperates with police. So you have to have all the words connected to these police routines and so on to have it right. So I actually consulted some of my friends who work who are police, actual policemen. What do they know about the routines and the words, and what would a real Czech policeman say? So these were the challenges.
Are you specialized in science fiction and fantasy, or did you translate something mainstream?
I did also some mainstream translations. One was basically a historical romance, which I translated from German to Czech. And recently some, say, contemporary mainstream books from English to Czech.
And did you find any difference in these two different works, or is the same difficulty, the same operation?
I would say that each translation is the same and different at the same time. Because you have to, as a ideal translator, you have to be invisible. You have to bring the original text to the other language, not leave a trace of your presence, and to bring the original author to your audience. And that means that not only each genre, but each author and each book is different. The task is the same, but you have to accomplish it the best you can to simply transform it smoothly, seamlessly, the best way possible.
And I'm told that you wrote some stories directly in English, into English. Are you working as the translator of yourself, or are you just thinking in English while writing?
I do both. I have translated some of my short stories, which were original in Czech. I translated them into English, and it was translator's work. And of course, I have to admit that I did some minor changes because it was my own text. And I thought, oh, I think that these details would be better in English like this. So it was easier because I could change what I needed. It was my own work, and I could do whatever I wanted with it, which I would never dare to do with somebody else's work while translating. And when I wrote directly in English, it was really, I was thinking in the language and concentrating in the language. So it was a different thing.
And were there anyone checking your final text?
Oh yes, definitely yes. Even if I write only in Czech, I have beta readers and correctors who see it and read it before I give it to the publisher, who has the editors of his own. But I want my text to be as perfect as possible, be it original work or translation. And I'm sure that most of you know this effect of author's blindness, that if you work long enough on the text, you stop seeing the mistakes, be it grammar mistakes, be it logical mistakes, be it stylistical mistakes. So it really needs at least one extra pair of eyes, and I usually have like five of these readers to check the thing after me. So they are my friends, they like it, and they can be very cruel and merciless when they find some mistakes. So true friends, exactly.
Thank you. So Silvia, can you speak about your translation experience with science fiction and fantasy?
Well, I found that Lucy has already said many things that I've always thought, and I completely agree with her about the invisibility of translation, which is something very important to achieve, because the people who read a book should find themselves at home in what they read. And so they usually, if you've done well your job, they finally forget that the book they're reading is not written in Italian, in my case, in the language in which they read it, but it was written in another language. This task is more difficult in science fiction and fantasy, because you have to do a sort of double translation, because what you are giving to your reader is not our world, is a world which is different because it is set in another time, in future or past, or in a fantasy world. It is more difficult to make the reader feel at home in such a kind of text. You have to text the borders of your language, of the word you use every day, and make up other words and use the words in a completely different way. And also make this other world so similar to our world that the reader forgets not only that he's reading something which was written in another language, but also that he's reading something that is set in a nowhere, in an elsewhere. And so this is the real difficult task of the science fiction or fantasy translator. And this is the reason why when you have to do such a thing, you often need to research, you need to check the science of science fiction, check if you can understand what is written, and use your helpful friends, as she said also, to help you to solve the problems that maybe you about things that you don't know, because you're not you cannot know everything. So you have to often need some help. But all of this is something that the final reader must not perceive. He must not realize that the work and the difficulty, the difficulties of the job. He has to have the feeling that this is smooth, as Ashley said, this is easy, this is something very natural.
Can you give us an example of something very difficult that you find to translate in science fiction or fantasy?
Well, I think that it was quite difficult. The three books they translated together, the Carl Schroeder books, which were set in a very peculiar kind of universe, in which there was it was a sort of air balloon with no gravity except the the centripetal
centrifugal force.
The centrifugal force, thank you. And with the sail ships who navigated in this peculiar space with one big sun at the center of it, which was the source of life for the whole universe, and other littler suns spread around, and people who fought for the possession or the creation of new suns in order to live, to have to grow food, to have power, and so on. This was a very beautiful kind of science fiction, very adventurous. But at the same time, it was very difficult from a scientific point of view to convey this, all those peculiarities.
Yes, luckily I have a scientific background, so I gave some help in translating this book. That, because Carl Schroeder invented a completely special physics. For example, in this world where there is no gravity, a candle cannot burn unless you put a something to move the air around it, because the carbon is not taken away from convection, because there is no convection, there is no gravity. So when you have burned the oxygen there, the flame dies. So the candle must have some kind of fan with a spring to burn. And the book is full of this kind of strange apparata for a different physics than our own. I must say, sometimes you worry for nothing. For example, we met a very complex description of a room, and we could not understand how this room was done, because one side said that this was dug in the la roccia, in the rock. But on the other side, they said that it was coming out from the rock. So how can it both be dug and coming out? So we wrote to the author, and the author answered, "Oh, I don't remember. Just say that it's a strange shape." So it was nothing important. So, Robert, how did you come to translate a role-playing game? So first of all, what kind of role-playing game is it?
It's Dune. So the Dune movies will be out this year. So the first one this year, the next one probably next year. And there will also be a television series. And that gives some new fire to the franchise, of course. And in the wake of this new fire for that, there will be there already is in English a role-playing game called Adventures in the Imperium. And I have a very special history with Dune. So today I'm a full-time writer. Since 2013, I do nothing else. I write science fiction and fantasy. That's what I make my living off. And it wouldn't be if it wouldn't be for Dune. So Dune really had a profound impact on my personal life and my professional life as well. And I'm also a cineast, so I love going to the movies, to cinema. When I was younger, I did this even more often, so like twice a week. And the David Lynch movie of Dune was the only movie that I went out of the cinema, because it was too much for me. So I was too young at that age. So the scene when the evil Baron, he unplugs this slave and pushes all of his blood in his face, I threw up and I went out of the cinema, right? Today I own 4 or 5 versions of this movie on Blu-ray and DVD, so different versions, different cuts of it. I own all of the 20 Dune novels that are out there right now. It's really my favorite franchise, so I'm really a Dune nerd. And when I learned that this role-playing game was published in German by a role-playing company that I have close ties with for other reasons, but I know them very well. So I just picked up the phone and I asked them, "Do you already have a translator for that?" And now you have. So no excuses, you don't hire anybody else. I will do it. And That's how I came to translate the core rulebook for this role-playing game, which has, I think, a bit above a million keystrokes in English. So that was to be translated. And then three supplements. And yeah, that's what I did. So it will be out in a few months. And that was interesting work, absolutely.
Do you have to keep coherence with other translated material, or you are just the first?
That's why I'm the only one in Germany who could do it. That was really difficult. So that was of course, the Dune novels are translated into German as well, and not only once. So there are different translations on it. And the role-playing company, they asked the current publisher, which is Heine Publishing House, Random House. It's the German branch of Random House, so they do it in German. And they asked them if they would be okay with us taking the terminology that they established in the latest version of the translation, so not the former versions, the latest version of the translation. And even to make it even more spicy, the spice must flow, so to make it more spicy is there are quotes from the books in the role-playing game. So for corresponding sections in the role-playing game, there are quotes in it. So we were allowed to take the quotes, but how do you get the quotes? So I purchased all of the current ebook versions of all of the new novels, all 20 of them, so I could make a text church in there. So then I found out which chapter is this quotation from. Then I take the book from my shelf. Okay, that's it. And then I put it in there, right? So that's for that. So that's the easy one, because you can spot this as a quotation. The not so easy one is if it's just terminology. Because we got the glossary from the translator of the novels, but it's not complete. By far, it's not complete. And you can understand that, because it's such a huge universe. Mm-hmm. It cannot be complete. But of course, me being a complete Dune nerd, I found, or I spotted at least some of these, and then I could again look it up in the books, in the e-books, and then look it up in the German version as well. And the triumph of my translator life, so my only translation is this book, but the triumph of this translation is that there is a quotation, real quotation from the first novel. So word by word, one sentence is translated, uttered by Peter de Vries, the twisted mentor of the evil Baron Harkonnen. And that was overlooked in the German translation. In the old one, I am the first one to translate this sentence into German of the Dune novel.
Yes.
Wonderful.
This is where I expect some round of applause, please, from the audience.
So generally speaking, how do you think they were the first German translation of Dune?
I have to say some of the first, so the very first one was a crime, because they cut it to one third of the length, right? So that is a crime incorporated into a book, and I hope that the publisher responsible for it still wakes up screaming at night for doing that, right? So we put that away. But for the other ones, I think from the 80s, the translation, it has some strong points in there. I generally speaking, I like the new translation better, but there are some passages where I still would opt, if I would have the liberty to opt, I would have opted for the old one. But of course, we want to make sure that the readers who are now accustomed to the new translation, that they really find the terminology that they know. For example, the Litany Against Fear. It has been translated differently, and it's very, very prominent. So actually, in Corona times, if you wash your hands, you should wash it for a certain amount of time, right? So if you recite the Litany Against Fear while washing with the soap, it's exactly the time. So exactly the time you need to be safe for all the germs and everything, right? I'm digressing, don't I?
Oh no, it's very, very fun, very interesting.
Okay, no, but so generally speaking, I think the new translation has its value, absolutely. But the old one has some strong piece in there as well.
And new activity, did it surprise you in some way, or did you find no difficulties passing to being a writer to be a translator?
I'm not sure. I already had some great respect for translators before, and basically that proved to be justified. So it's really a hard job. You have to be on your toes all the time. So it's very easy to make a mistake just by going with the flow and it should mean this and that and okay and la 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 la. And no, it's not. So it's really, really tough job, and it's really easy to make mistakes in there. So great respect for my translating colleagues here.
I would perhaps like to add a small anecdote, if you don't mind. Because as you said, it was easy to spot it was a quotation. So this funny story does not revolve around any of the books or short stories untranslated. I was doing a job for free. Don't repeat my mistake. My sister came and said, oh, we are doing these summer camps. I'm working, organizing that thing also. All right. And this year, the theme of the camp game was The Secret World, if you know the computer game. Never mind. It's not important. There is a thing called filth, and it slowly corrupts the mind of the characters and of anybody who gets near. And the people affected by the filth tend to say strange things and to babble nonsense. And we need it from the game, which is in English, obviously, to get this babbling translated into Czech so we could use it in the game. All right. It would be fun, they said. It won't take you a lot of time, they said. It would be highly appreciated, they said. And I believed it in the beginning. I got few sentences. It was not a story, it was just some few quotations. And I started the translation. And then I saw, oh dear, this is a pun. I have to somehow to get it into Czech. And this, I think, it's a quotation. It's Dante's Inferno. And this is another quotation. And this is a combination. It's a quotation from Peter Pan and a pun. It was like that, third star to the left and then straight on till morning. But morning. And suddenly I was sitting there searching for the quotations and somehow making the sentences work. In the end, this one I brought into Czech, the end, a pak rovně až do rány, because rána is a wound in Czech, or cut, and ráno is morning. So this stuff, I spent my weekend on it, and I was really in a murderous rage after I finished it. So don't do that, and don't do it for free, never.
I think that even Sylvia has something to tell about quotations in science fiction.
Well, quotations in science fiction, it happened to me many years ago. I was working on the new edition of The Year of the Quiet Sun, and there was an old translation which was good in itself, but the novel had been cut in some points. It didn't happen just in Germany, but in Italy also. And there were many sentences I could not it didn't sound right to me, the translation, but I didn't really, it, in the sentences sound something that I could recognize, but not exactly. So I Googled them and I realized they were all Shakespeare's quotations. But they were not to be or not to be or things like that. There was something more difficult to find. And then I thought, okay, my colleague 40 years ago could not have done what I'm doing now. He had not Googled. So I found out all the quotations, and then I found out all the good translation for it, and I put them in the novel in order to give to new readers the Shakespeare flavor of the novel.
Okay, so we have still a quarter of hour. Maybe can know another. Is there any other interesting anecdote you have to tell, Robert and Lucie?
I just want to emphasize that translation is not just taking the phrase from English or whatever language and put it in your own language, but oftentimes it really adds to that. So there's an additional value, or can be an additional value, to a translation. Where you, if the translator really understands the intent of the author and then is capable of putting this intent in the other language. And just to make some example of that, a colleague of mine, he had a book that was translated from German, so he is German, into English. And in this book, it's a fantasy novel, there is a magic device. It's a mirror made from water, and you can see some magical revelation into that. And the American translator, he translated it as water mirror, and I think he also proposed that as the title for the book, The Water Mirror. And that doesn't work in German at all. So even though it is a precise description of what it is, the one-to-one translation of water mirror would be Wasserspiegel, and this is already occupied in German as the height of the water in a river. Right. So that's the Wasserspiegel. It's how high the water stands. So now we had a lot of rain, so the river Rhine has a higher Wasserspiegel, water mirror, literal translation. But in English, there is not this meaning to water mirror. So in English, it's possible to do it. And this genius translator, he spotted it, and he proposed it, and it's perfect. It's even better than the original.
So I want to tell one thing that happened to me as a reader. I was reading one of the last novels by Neil Gaiman. I don't remember the English title. It's something like The Ocean at the End of the Path, or something like that.
The
Ocean at the End of the Street. And there was a magic wand, and it said that the magic wand was in a kind of wood, and I thought, why this kind of wood? Magic wands are usually made of walnut. Even we know this even from Harry Potter. Walnut is the kind of why. So I went to look for the original text, and the original text was walnut. So why the translator did change it? I don't know. So I'm asking to all you three, did you ever change something in a novel that did not convince you, and why did you do that? I still wonder why, anyway.
Well,
what kind of wood? I don't remember, but it was not the right kind.
Vegetables or plants and animal names, the problem is that often, especially when your author is American, the species do not exist in Italy or even Europe, so you cannot find a name, or maybe you find only the scientific name, but you cannot put it. especially because the common names, the English common names are very vivid, they're very peculiar, so you cannot put a Latin word instead of them, so sometimes I had to change something because it didn't work. As a matter of fact, I remember that the first time in my life I realized what really means to be a translator was when I read Watership Down, I have read it in Italian, I was 12 or 13, and the Italian translator, who was Giacomo Paolini, and he was a great translator, wrote a note. In this note, he explained the reason why he had changed some names. For example, there was a rabbit was called Blackberry, which is good in English, but Mora, which is a blackberry in Italian, for a male rabbit does not work. So this rabbit had become Mirtillo, which is something, it is still a berry, but another one. So that's a kind of a situation in which you have to change things because they just don't work in your language.
Okay, we have here Flora Stagliano, so maybe we could ask her something about translating for TV and movie adaptation. That is something I suppose quite different from literary translation, isn't it, Flora?
Yes, first of all, sorry, we had an emergency and I couldn't be here, and thank you very much to Marco for staying here in my place. How many of you have dubbing in their countries? Only Italians?
Germans,
you have dubbing in Germans. I'm quite sure about that. Mostly you have in Netherlands, right? But you have dubbing? For children, like in Croatia, okay. So mainly, I think the translation for dubbing and the translation for a novel are in a way very different, but very complementary. Because in a novel, of course, you also find dialogues to translate. And in dubbing, do not think only about TV series, but documentaries, for example. In documentaries, we could say that it's like, a page of a book where you describe, for example, a place or something like that. So I usually find out that people who do both kind of translations improve in dialogue if they translate a novel, and improve in descriptions, let's say, if they translate documentaries. The main difference, because I think it is a huge difference, is that while if you translate a novel, and just to be clear, I also translated novels for so many years, so that's why I know both worlds, let's say. When you translate a novel, usually your translation has been edited then. I mean, there is someone who just checks if you make mistakes, typos, or maybe if there is a better word to use, this kind of stuff. But the translator is supposed to do a final job, or almost final job, a finished one, let's say. In dubbing, it's not like this. In dubbing, translation is the first step, because after translation, there is the adapter, which is not a plug, is the person who needs to basically rewrite in his language, what is said in the original. For example, I don't know, Babylon 5, an episode of Babylon 5. Of course, the original is English, in Italy or in Germany or wherever dubbing is made, the translator has, the first step is that the translator has to translate, then the adapter needs to match the movement of the mouth, what is called sync, lip sync is called, and of course the sentence. I mean, the job of the adapter is to make the actors look natural as they were speaking in Italian, in German, in Finnish, in whatever other language, which is quite fascinating, I can tell you, but it's also quite difficult because just to give you an idea of the difference of job for translating a TV series, usually in one day, a couple of days, you translated it because it's just dialogue. To adapt that TV series, you usually need 1 week or 8 days because usually you manage to adapt 10 minutes of dialogue per day, which is not easy. And the other very important thing, I think, so is first, the translation for dubbing is not the final product, but it has a very important goal, which is to make the adapter be aware or of every nuance of the dialogue. For example, a bad word, a swear. I need to know how strong it is to understand which kind of swear or bad word I have to use in Italian or in the other language. Or, I don't know, you know, sometimes it's especially difficult with sitcom, because sitcom are very Americans, usually. And so, in that case, the work of the adapter is to usually changes a lot, because some things can be funny in English, but maybe they're not funny in Italian, because we are two different, very different people. So, you know, something can make you laugh in a language, but not in the other. So it's a quite complicated job, but as we're talking about translations here, I think this is the two main differences. So with a novel, it's the final step, or almost final, because then, of course, there is the editing and blah, 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 while with dubbing is the first step. So the final product is not the translation, but it's the adaptation and then other things too.
Okay, we have just less than 5 minutes, so maybe we could listen to the question from the public. Is there anybody who wants to ask something? Nobody?
Marco, posso dire forse un paio di aneddoti sul doppiaggio, tanto per...
Okay.
Okay. As there are no questions, I will... Just to give you an idea of how funny can be sometimes to translate for dubbing, especially in science fiction, I also supervised some Italian dubbings of science fiction series like The Expanse or Star Trek or Babylon 5. And when you have an adapter that is not into science fiction, you can really find very nice things. Like, for example, and I swear it's true, the Enterprise passing through a wormhole, but the wormhole was translated literally as the hole of the worm. So can you imagine a starship flying through the hole of a worm? Then another one is COM. COM, of course, we all know it's short for communication. But for a person who is not into science fiction, it was not communication, it was command. So we had the jamming of the command of the captain or whatever it was. Then what else? There are so many. So another thing which I don't know if you said during the panel, I think it is very important, especially for science fiction, to know what you're doing.
I am against anyone translating science fiction. As a fan, I'm saying. I think if you translate science fiction, you must have read science fiction a lot. If possible, you must be a fan. Because also in TV series like, for example, Big Bang Theory, you lose the jokes. If you don't know science fiction, you lose at least half of the jokes. So I think it's really, really important. But it's funny because sometimes, you know, I don't know how is that being considered in your country. In Italy, we have a very long tradition of dubbing, and I must say that the dubbers are, generally speaking, quite good. But there are many people against dubbing. And of course, I agree with the fact that in 90% of the cases, the original is always better. So my advice for those who can is to watch or to read everything in original. But this is not always possible, because if it's English, okay, if it's French, maybe German. But what about Korean? And many interesting things are coming from Korea. What about China with, you know, novels? And I mean, China now is a really interesting place for novels and all this kind of stuff. So I think we either we go with subtitles, which is good. It's okay. But I don't know you, but with subtitles, I have a little bit of a problem because I tend to read and to miss a little bit of what is happening, for example, in a scene.
With this translation or not translation, there was with this translation or not translation of terms, there was a huge debate on A Song of Ice and Fire, so the books for Game of Thrones, before the television series came out. So preparing the television series, they had a new edition of them in German. And in this new edition, they decided to translate the names of the families.
Into German?
Into German likings, let's say that. So, for example, Greyjoy is a name in A Song of Ice and Fire, and they translated it to Graufreud, which is a German translation, and it was outrageous. So,
what did you think about that? Awful, I imagine.
It was complete disaster, because it's. But with your example from Korea, I'm not sure if I would have the same feelings about that, because I can sense the meaning of it in English. I can sense a meaning of Greyjoy. It has some feeling for me. A Korean name wouldn't have that feeling for me. So maybe it would be a good idea to translate it if it would come from Korea. But Graufreud in Germany, this term Grau, it can be a translation of gray. It can be a translation of eerie as well. So then it becomes a different meaning for that as well. And then in A Song of Ice and Fire, we have the Stark family being derived from a German word, Stark. So it stands out because all of the other words, all of the other family names are English, but they are German. The Starks are German. You remember that. The North remembers. So, but if you translate the English names into German likings, then the Starks don't stand out anymore. And so you lose, actually by translating, you lose some level of meaning in there as well.
I completely agree. But we have to say one thing in defense of us translator, that it's not, we are not those who decide. Because for novels, of course, decide the publisher. I think in your countries too. And with dubbing, let's say for the Italian part, for example, is the director of dubbing, but the final decisions is always the client. So if Netflix tells me that you have to keep that in original, even if it doesn't. We had a problem. There is a movie on Netflix that came out, I think, a few weeks ago, which is called Stowaway. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you've seen it, but basically the premises are completely wrong because there is this mission to, let's say, the International Mars Station, because they are going to Mars, and they find Odio clandestino.
Stowaway.
Sorry. So inside the rocket, which is, I mean, unbelievable. But we had a problem with Netflix because Netflix wanted us to translate some things that in Italian are well known in English, because we have a very long and established tradition with the Italian Space Agency. So, for example, nobody in Italian would ever translate Godspeed, which is the traditional salute, you know, to the astronauts that are going away, the wish you luck, blah, blah, blah. So the dubbing director had to send an email to the Netflix USA, let's say, and say, no, this is completely wrong. I mean, if we follow your guidelines, the dubbing will be awful, and all the fans will think that this was done by somebody who doesn't speak science fiction. So every now and then, it also depends a lot on who you have on the other side, who decides if it's narrow-minded or not, and with science fiction particularly is, I think, problematic, because we all know, being science fiction fans, how we are so, we want it to be precise, we want it to be, and you know, sometimes those who have to decide what you have to do and to take the final decision are not science fiction fans and cannot understand that. So thank God Netflix said, no, if you say that you have a long tradition, Jen, just do what you think is best. But it's not always like that. So it's not always the translator fault, please.
Okay, I think we can close here. We are already late. The dinner is ready. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Avete ascoltato Fantascientificast, podcast di fantascienza e cronache della galassia, da un'idea di Paolo Bianchi e Omar Serafidi, con il contributo cibernetico del Cylon Prof Massimo De Santo. Potete seguirci ed interagire con noi sul nostro sito fantascientificast.it, su Facebook alla pagina Fantascientificast, su Twitter sul profilo @fantascicast, sul nostro canale Telegram t.me/fantascientificast, sulla nostra community Telegram t.me/fsccommunity. Se siete particolarmente timidi, potete utilizzare la vecchia, cara e affidabile posta elettronica scrivendoci all'indirizzo redazione@fantascientificas.it. Tutte le puntate sono disponibili sul nostro sito, su Apple iTunes, su Spotify e su Podbean all'indirizzo podcast.fantascientificas.it. Se volete, potete lasciarci una valutazione a 5 stelle su Apple iTunes ed offrirci una birra romulana o un gotto esplosivo pangalattico, sostenendoci tramite una donazione PayPal utilizzando l'apposito pulsante sul nostro sito. Fantascientificast è una produzione amatoriale. Non si intende infrangere alcun copyright, i cui diritti appartengono ai rispettivi detentori. Autorizzazione SIAE 5612I5359. Nessun byte e nessun tribolo sono stati maltrattati durante la produzione di questo podcast. Alexa 4 e l'equipaggio di Fantascientificast vi augurano lunga vita e prosperità e vi danno appuntamento alla prossima puntata lungo la rotta di Kessel.
Settimo simbolo inserito nel computer. Blocco 1 pronto. Blocco 1 posizionato.
Potenza erogata 23%. Così.
Blocco 2 è pronto.
Attivato.
Blocco 2 posizionato.
Siamo al 35%.
L'arme rosso, evacuare l'area intorno allo Stargate.
Liberate l'area, torniamo da voi, chiudo le porta.
Andiamo, sbrigate.
C'era quello sotto la grande pietra?
Sì. Mio padre lo trovò nel 1928. È fatto di un minerale che non si trova sulla Terra.
Blocco 5 posizionato.
75%.
Blocco 6 pronto. Blocco 6 posizionato.
Non eravamo mai riusciti ad andare oltre nella sequenza.
There. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.